Hello, listeners. Thanks for joining us for Tiny Sparks, Big Flames. I'm your host, Leadership and Success Coach Deb Gott. I've spent my entire life pursuing my passions and dreams, from university professor to intelligence officer to magazine founder to coach. What an amazing journey. And if there's one thing I've learned in the process, it's the incredible power of stories. That's what this podcast is all about. You'll hear from courageous people from all walks of life who are daring to live their dreams. From creatives, innovators, and difference makers to business leaders and entrepreneurs, you'll hear about their remarkable journeys and learn their success secrets. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. In 3, 2, 1. Welcome, everyone, to Tiny Sparks, Big Flames. I'm your host, Deb Gott. Today, the talented Mark Witzling joins me in the studio. Mark is currently the executive director of Craft Alliance in St. Louis, Missouri, and has served in that role since 2018. He's also an award-winning abstract art painter, and his art is in collections across the U.S. and around the globe, from Paris to Mumbai. His work is also included in the Museum of Encaustic Art in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks, Deb. Appreciate it.
What I want to do is begin with your very unconventional journey into the world of art. Take us through that arc of your career that led you to become the executive director of Craft Alliance and your work as an artist.
Sure, I'll tell you my life story. No, it's been an interesting career for me, and I guess I'll go back to coming out of school, right? Coming out of college and knowing that at that point I wanted to kind of prove myself, get out in the work world and get on with it. And ultimately went and got my MBA. Again, not something you think of from an artist. I do have an MBA from Boston University. I went to McAllister College as an undergrad. But I started in brand marketing and brand management. And I was at the Gillette Company, which is now part of Procter & Gamble. But at the time, it was independent as Gillette. And I worked on these various brands, from shave creams to antiperspirant and deodorants to, you know, shampoos. And I think that one of the things that I enjoyed so much about it, besides just brand strategy and branding as we think of it today, is the interaction with the agencies and the creatives. So I was surrounded by creative people, but I was the client. I was the business person. I wasn't creating. I was working with them to achieve goals through creative. And so that inspired me, and I continued to do that with different companies. I won't walk through my whole LinkedIn profile. People can go look at that. But I was in brand marketing for many years, and it was, well, I'll say starting in the mid-80s, okay? And then in the late 90s, I ended up on a, happened to be on a trip to Europe, and I was in Italy. And I like to say that I saw art where the artist meant it to be. And, you know, Michelangelo created that sculpture for the nave of that church, for that specific spot. And the intellectual part of me kind of wanted to know why. What was he thinking? That's what I was asking. I wasn't thinking I want to go create. I was trying to say, well, what in the world was going through this person's mind when that was created? And when I got back to the States, got home, you know, I started painting just to explore that, and it kind of took off from there. And it was always just a hobby. It was just a side thing that I was just doing. And ultimately, you know, I started getting more involved in the local art community, and then the opportunity came up to join Craft Alliance as an executive director, and there was a big moment of a decision to leave the corporate world. I had been, the last role, I'd spent the 8 years prior as a senior vice president in the marketing organization for Citibank. And it's a big organization, right? And I had the opportunity to go to a small, entrepreneurial, long-established craft organization and made the change. So that's how I ended up at Craft Alliance in 2018.
And now you've taken up art as a hobby, right? Mm-hmm. After you came back from that trip.
Yeah.
How did you get from art as a hobby to award-winning artist with these pieces around the globe?
Yeah, it evolved, right? And at some point, it took me by surprise, I guess. The, you know, a big moment was there came a point where I sold my first painting, right? And it was in my home. There were some folks over at our house, and I was asked, how much does that cost? And it wasn't something I'd ever thought about really doing seriously. And it was like, I don't know. And a sale happened, and it kind of went from there. And then, you know, I started to get serious about it. And I think one of the key things for me is the discipline of it. I started painting at the very beginning. I went to a studio, a local artist who, you know, hosts classes and hosts people in her studio on Monday evenings. And that, again, was in the late 90s. And here it is. I'm still doing it every Monday night. I'm in the same place, in the same studio. I've been going all these years. And that's the discipline of it. And then my own practice, my rule, and I'm not perfect at this, to be truthful, but my rule is to be in my studio every day. And I'm working full-time and then some, but I still go into my studio every day. I may not paint every day, but I'm physically in that space to inspire myself. I do that daily.
Most people don't think about art, I would imagine, as a discipline, but it sounds like it's less a discipline than it is being disciplined about what you do and being very intentional mm-hmm. in how you do it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think to improve at anything, you know, there's the old 10,000 hours mantra and all that, but coming out of the business world, I joke with people that say, how do you have time to paint? And I say, well, I don't golf, right? So you give up that time. You know, we're in St. Louis. At some point, St. Louis lost our football team, the Rams. And guess what? All of a sudden, I had Sunday afternoons back, right? And it's like, wow, that's time I can create by not filling it with something else. I fill it with time working on my art. It is a discipline. It's something you have to focus on. And you just have to be intentional about it.
So you said one pivotal moment was the trip to Europe,
mm-hmm. yep.
right? What were a couple of other pivotal moments for you as an artist?
Yeah. So there's a couple, I suppose. I think that first sale was a pivotal moment, kind of like, oh, wait, really, this can happen. The others are a combination of things. One is an artist residency that I did in France. I had the opportunity to go to Chateau Arquevaux in Arquevaux, France, which is 2.5 hours outside of Paris. So it's not in Paris. It's out in rural France, and got to spend a couple of weeks painting. And that's exciting, and it sounds glamorous and all of that. The reality is it was hard work, but I had no distractions for those couple of weeks. It was purely an artistic endeavor. And I think that it wasn't until I was back from that experience that I realized the reason it was pivotal is because the fear that I had going in was, I'm going to go paint for 2 weeks with no distractions and nothing else to do. What happens if after day two, I'm done? That's all I've got. And that didn't happen. Everything just took off. It was exponential. And that was just enlightening.
Yeah. When you think about yourself, let's do it on two levels. Yourself as a leader of an arts organization, mm-hmm. your work as an artist. What three words would you use to describe yourself first as a business leader?
I think in some ways it's going to be the same three words.
Interesting.
And I'm going to switch it up on you by saying it's three words, but it's a phrase rather than three separate words. It's something that is kind of something I've lived by for a long time, right or wrong. It's me, and that is strength and humility, right? I think that you don't have to be outrageous. You don't have to be braggadocio, all of that. Strength can come out of being humility. I believe in leadership, that there are more ways to get things done, right? There's not just my way. And as a leader, you need to set the parameters, and people can find ways to get it done that you may not even have thought of, and that allows them to be creative, right? And then if I switch that over to painting and the artistic endeavor, it's the same thing, right? I don't walk around thinking every painting I did is a masterpiece. I think most painters, if they're honest, will tell you that they do plenty of pieces that they don't put out in public, right? But again, you learn what and why and how, and you learn your voice, and you keep pursuing that. So strength and humility, I think, is the phrase that drives me.
You said something interesting. You said you find your voice. And I'm curious because, of course, painting is a visual medium as opposed to an auditory one. Mm-hmm. What does your voice look like?
It's interesting because it's hard to describe. I'll admit I'm an abstract oil painter. I typically paint with oil and cold wax medium. And what I love doing is what many people that paint in that way do, which is building up layers. So I love color. I love making marks in my work and building up layers. So color, marks, layers, that's part of my voice. My painting is how I express myself using those tools and techniques. And the visual that you see, that is my voice, right? So somebody else could sit here and tell you the exact same thing and then go paint the same way, and we would produce two different paintings. And that's your voice, right? So there are people that spend a lot of time in the arts seeking their voice. They're on this sort of goal and mission to discover their voice. And if I've learned anything, and this ties back to that strength and humility comment, it's to not have to pursue it. Let it happen. Just keep painting. And what you're creating is your voice. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I think about it.
It does. What I love is that you're being drawn to it. You're not chasing it.
Exactly. Yes, very right? much so. It's there, right? You just have to let it happen.
Yeah. I love that. What inspires your work as an artist?
What inspires my work? You get asked that a lot. Ultimately, I think the external stimulus that inspires my work is a combination of two very different things. One is landscape and nature. Sure, of course it does. I think we're all on this earth, and that obviously it impacts everything we do. So it does, and it does impact my work. But the themes and the things that I'm painting, when it's abstract, that the viewer doesn't necessarily see, but I think about, are concepts that are intangible. For example, I have a series of paintings that's very meaningful to me, and others may not see it, but it's about truth and truth in public discourse and the challenges we all have in our world today, trying to discern the truth in what we hear. And I think that our role as citizens has changed. Our role as citizens now is to discover the truth in what we're hearing, right? You can watch two very different channels on TV and hear two very different things, right? So it's our job to figure out what is reality. And I'm trying to express some of that in my work. So it's intangible concepts like that that I think about when I start painting.
So truth, humility, strength.
Truth, humility, strength, you know, responsibility. There's a range of words that I tend to think of when I get started. And again, that translates into a painting, but anybody that doesn't know that history or that story that I'm working with can walk up and still needs to have a positive visceral reaction to what they're viewing. So the technique has to work as well.
Sure. A question about your artistic heroes. Who particularly has inspired your work or informed your work?
Yeah, I think there, you know, I guess first I need to give credit to three contemporary mentors that I've worked with. And my learning, I didn't go to art school, right? I learned, and people say, well, you're self-taught. And I hate that term because I'm not self-taught. I've learned from others. And you seek people out that you admire and you learn from them. Three people that come to mind in no particular order, Adrian Rosen, who's local in St. Louis. Told you I paint in a studio every Monday night. That's where I got started, and I'm still there. Rebecca Kroll in Wisconsin, and is seen as one of us, I'll say, the foremost leaders in the oil and cold wax movement. How about that? She's wonderful. I studied with her several times. And Pamela Coey, also a painter, both an encaustic painter and an oil and cold wax painter and other things, and she's just been an inspiration to me. So those three are contemporary painters that I just admire, and they're personal heroes. Names that more people would know, Richard Diebenkorn at the moment is a huge inspiration to me. The ability to take abstract color and mesh that with how the landscape was inspiring him. He spent time both in California and then did years in New Mexico in the Southwest, and the paintings differ. The colors changed when he changed locations. And I find that just absolutely fascinating. You know, I think that Hans Hoffmann, you know, is sort of the renowned colorist of the abstraction era, but he does inspire me. I love the work, and I hope that some of that has infiltrated into my way of being.
What people may or may not know about you is that you also teach art. What things have you learned from those role models, those mentors, that you've adapted into your own way of teaching others?
I think that part of it is to blend a sense of certainly teaching and sharing techniques and you know, transferring knowledge, right, from teacher to student is important, but there's also this give and take in that you need to recognize that the student's style, voice, their approach is going to differ from yours, right? The goal isn't necessarily to have them paint like you. This is how I do it, so do it this way. That's not right. It's showing them the tools and techniques and encouraging them to figure out how they want to express themselves. I've learned that from those teachers. It's hard to do because you still need to guide the students down a path. And different students have different levels of desire to learn. Some want you to tell them exactly what to do, and some want freedom to I'm here at this workshop just to paint, right? Yeah, but there's some structure to it. So yeah. It's a balance.
A question about following a passion or dream. Mm-hmm. What for you are upsides and downsides of following any dream or passion that we have?
Upsides and downsides of following a passion. It is a blend. The downside is easy to understand, I think, which is overcoming the fear or perceived fear, the risk, all of those things. And, you know, eventually you have to decide if that's what you want to do. You know, for me, moving and leaving the corporate world to go and lead a nonprofit was something I chose to do. It was a conscious decision, knowing that there was certainly risk involved. But, you know, I learned a long time ago, both personal life and in business world, that when you take a risk, you know, looking over the edge of the cliff and saying, okay, the worst thing that could happen is I fall and I hit down there. What's the downside? What's the impact of that, right? If it's smashing in off the cliff, you may not want to take that dive. But if you can live with that happening and understand that you're going to take that risk, that's how you make that choice. So that's the downside, managing through that risk and understanding it. The other downside, because I think this is also important for many artists and me to some extent, and I'm reminded this every once in a while, is that sense of being a poser. Are you really an artist, right? Is that okay, right? At what point, just because you create art, are you able to call yourself an artist, right? And getting over that, right? And once you get past that, it's very freeing. It's very, very freeing. So it's a self-definition. Nobody else defines it for you. So those are the downsides. The upsides way outweigh those downsides. The upside is the freedom, right? The joy of doing something that you're passionate about can't be overemphasized in terms of the value of that on life. A lot of people talk about sports analogies and they talk about being in the zone and, you know, all of that. But when you're doing what you truly are meant to be and you're in that space, it's fantastic. There's nothing like being in the studio, painting. You know, I usually have music going or whatever, but you know, you're just on your own doing what you're meant to do. And you just know it. And it's that feeling.
Yeah. It's funny that you say it's very liberating. And when I think of what you're expressing, it's that expansive part of really stepping into the thing that you're most passionate about, that's really sort of your soul talking.
Yeah.
And that expansiveness is just, I would imagine, at times overwhelming and joyful.
Yeah, and it can be challenging and frustrating because you're not achieving what you're trying to do. You know, all of that, there's a give and take. I guess the other way to think about that difference is that when you're in the business world, right, and you're pursuing your career, you're setting goals, but you're doing it for a particular purpose for that business. You're working for someone else. On a task team, whatever, you're writing, you're trying to hit your budget, all of those things that go on, but you're doing that for a different purpose and a different reason than just purely yourself, right?
Yeah.
When you're pursuing your passion, and in my case, painting, and you're pursuing it just for yourself, it just is completely freeing, and that's energizing, and that's when, I'm going to circle back now to something I said earlier, that's why strength and humility is really important, because if you don't control that, you hear about the egotistic artists and all those stories. When that can't be controlled, it can get you out of control.
Yeah.
So it's just being humble about it.
Sure. A fun question.
All right.
So what would you say your superpower is? And what would you say is your kryptonite?
I don't know what my superpower is in that sense, other than to say it's always or almost always think of things as being glass half full. I'm an optimist by nature. I'm not a pessimist by nature. And that combined with that humility, those two things, that would be my superpower, I suppose. What's my kryptonite? I guess the kryptonite is that internal question mark that's always there. right? Always questioning, are you doing the right thing? Is it the right choice? Not so much right or wrong in decisions, but more about that poser syndrome, right? And being sure that, you know, you are who you are trying to be, if that makes sense. That's probably the kryptonite.
How do you dial that volume back and not let that fear get in the driver's seat?
Really good question. I think that it's about staying motivated and keep moving forward, right? Especially when you're in the studio. When I'm there and I'm creating paintings, my paintings are built up of layer over layer of layer, and it's oil, so they take a long time. My paintings take a long time to create, and I'm working on many at a time because of that. So when you build up those layers, you know, we talk about the ugly stage, you know, that's in the middle, and it has to evolve, and you have to come to accept that those things are going to happen, and then you just keep on moving, and then something great can happen. So it's about keeping those other voices out because you know that it's going in a positive place. I tell students this as well, and that is when you're painting abstractly, for the most part, there are no mistakes. You don't go back to correct a mistake. If you're building up layers, you can always build up more layers and just keep going forward. And that's powerful.
That sounds like some pretty great advice for a number of different parts of our lives, right?
Right.
All right. Another fun question for you. What books are sitting right now on your nightstand or on your Kindle just waiting to be read?
There are always books on my nightstand, and it gets deep and then it gets narrow. So books on my nightstand right now, and I don't have any that are unread. Okay, they're all in the middle of. I read different books at a time. I read one for a while, and I kind of move them around. One that's on my nightstand right now is Fifth Street Women, which I have read. Fifth Street Women is just a wonderful book about the female artists of the abstraction period. And it's just a wonderful book. It's an extremely long book, but it's good. I have the Lincoln biography by John Meacham, which I think was out maybe a year ago or so. I'm in the middle of that. Lincoln's always been somebody of interest to me. I've read a couple of different biographies, and interesting to me because of that whole, I think he personifies strength and humility. I think he overcame his own personal demons to do great things, but he lived humbly. I find that interesting. And then there's a book that I picked up at a local bookstore, Left Bank Books, that, you know, St. Louisans will know well. And I believe the title is Short Sentences About Creative Writing. Something like that. I may be slightly off on the title of it, but it's a very short book. It's written in very short sentences, and it is about writing. And it's captured my attention because not only is it a book about writing, it's also a book about being creative. I can apply everything said in that book to painting, and I think that's great. And one of the premises of the author is that in school, we're not really told how to write sentences. We're taught how to write reports. We're taught how to write paragraphs and structure things that lead you from a start to a finish. But writing a good sentence is an art in and of itself. And to me, that's like a paint stroke is art in and of itself. It's not about always just creating the full painting. And I'm drawing analogies as I read the book. It's powerful.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
If you could spend an entire weekend with any living artist and paint with that artist, who would that be and why?
Oh, wow. Do I have to pick? Can I go back to my three contemporary heroes and just go with that? I don't even know if I can possibly answer that question. If I just had to pick one, that's just impossible.
Well, then let's go with your three. What would you want to do for each of those three people? What would you want to do over that weekend together with them?
Simply paint. Yeah, it wouldn't be about lessons. It wouldn't be about techniques and all that, because we do that, right? But it would be, you know, just creating at the same time. You're doing that. Oh, let's try this, and doing those kinds of things. You know, I've been in some workshops with a group while we're working over 4 or 5 days or whatever it is, at the same time that we might put up a panel on our own, and all of us are painting on that during the week as well. Doing that with those mentors would be just fun, right? It'd be about being free and just creating.
What sounds like. Yeah. It's like your own personal sandboxes, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Totally.
Beautiful. We have two more questions. Yeah. First question. Where are special places you love to go in St. Louis for fun or play or inspiration?
There's a few places in no particular order, but, I have to start with the St. Louis Art Museum, the Contemporary Wing, which is just a great way to go and actually see some of the work of artists I admire, right? And that's inspiring to me. I don't try to copy them or do anything like that, but to just walk through the space and absorb that is great. One of the beautiful things is that Craft Alliance as an organization is not far from there, so it's easy for me to get over to do that. So that's an artistic inspiration. You know, I talked about nature before. I go to Creve-Coeur Park a lot, walk my dog, that kind of thing. And, the waterfalls, the lake, the hills, the cliffs, there's just a lot there to absorb. And I enjoy doing that. Those are probably the two that come to mind.
Okay, beautiful. Yeah. Mark Whistling, what do you dream of accomplishing in the next 5 years?
Well, for me, the next 5 years are to evolve my role from a leadership role at Craft Alliance, which I absolutely love. It's the best job I have ever had. But in that time frame somewhere, I will become a full-time artist. I'll be a painter full-time. Right now, I tend to think that and say that I have two full-time jobs. I have my full-time Craft Alliance leadership role, and then I full-time painting. That needs to evolve into one full-time painting scenario. That's my future.
Sounds like a beautiful future.
Works for me.
Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show and spreading the word about us to all of your family and friends. Mark, how can people learn more about both Craft Alliance and you as an award-winning artist?
Well, I think for Craft Alliance, it's very easy. Go to www.craftalliance.org. For my art, go to www.markwhistlingart, and it's M-A-R-K. WITZLING art.com.
Do you do any social media?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram. And on Facebook, it's Mark Whistling Art. And Instagram, it's WITZM, WITZM. Come visit.
Fantastic. Everybody, come visit Mark's websites, his social media. His work is truly delightful.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Tiny Sparks, Big Flames. If you enjoyed the conversation, definitely check out our webpage at tinysparksbigflames.com. You can find more great information about today's guests, see what they're up to, and even follow their work. Until next time, dream big, and thanks for listening.